The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Is anybody paying attention except we and Viros? Is the country asleep? I know everybody's concerned about jobs and the economy and the cost of living and all that stuff. It's important, and yet we're ignoring these very critical environmental issues. And one after another presidential candidate gets into the race, at least on one side of the ticket, declaring proudly and arrogantly they do not believe in climate change, or at least would not do anything about it or spend any federal dollars. As, you know, the climactic shifts occur. We even had an earthquake here in the Bay Area. I know they had one in D.C. in the last day or two. So Mother Nature is not only shouting at us now, she's really trying to shake us up and say, hey, folks, nothing's possible on a planet that is not calm and stable, and where I can continue to give you all the gifts that you rely on every day to live and survive and thrive. So it seems like we're heading for some kind of cataclysmic encounter with the reality, the truth of science, and those who would have us believe there's no problem and are trying to divert us from what many of us see as, if not the biggest challenge, one of the biggest, and of course it's not just one. When you look at the ecological crises unfolding, it's hard to even get our arms around, you know, what to deal with first, and yet there's too much lack of dealing with any of them in a real substantive manner going on. I know you know what I'm talking about, or you wouldn't be listening to The Green Front. I am your host, Betsy Rosenberg, a little fired up. We've been doing green tea parties around the Bay Area. We've done about a half dozen so far, getting a great reception. Be talking a little bit more about that in the second half. But I want to welcome to The Green Front a guest who has been here before, 3 or 4 months ago, actually someone who has become a friend of mine, along with D.R. Tucker, my favorite climate convert, Susan and Roger Schimmel are also in that category, and we all met in Boston on the hottest day of the year with a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, 104 degrees was the number I recall in Boston, and just the same place the Tea Party was formed. We had lunch discussing what the Green Tea Party is going to be all about and how we can work together to make sure that we don't get any candidates into Congress or, God forbid, into the White House who don't understand what we are up against, at least in terms of climate change and all the other attendant problems that come with it, like ocean acidification, et cetera. So it was wonderful to meet Roger and Susan and DR, and I asked Roger to join me today to talk about something that their group, Global Warming Educational Network, or GWEN, is trying to do to address climate change. It has to do with something we can all take part in, because we all pretty much drive, many of us do, and it's about the speed limit. We're going to find out what the connection is between that and CO2 emissions. Also, since Roger and Susan have been watching closely the tar sands protests in D.C., perhaps you have too, and all the arrests, including environmental activist extraordinaire Bill McKibben, who at least spent a day or two, I think, behind bars and is now released, busy doing interviews, trying to get him on the Green Front. But we will get somebody from the protest in the second half. But for now, I want to say hello to Roger, and thanks for joining me on short notice once again. But I decided that with all the emails coming from you and Susan and DR, following the scene very closely from the East Coast, that you could talk with me about a couple things, including really what's behind the opposition to this oil pipeline. And Bill McKibben has called it a line in the sand for President Obama, and NASA scientist James Hansen has said that if we lose this battle, it'll be game over for the climate. So a really important issue there unfolding, and yet so many Americans are either unaware or unconcerned, and how do we, you know, bring those two worlds together sooner? So thanks, Roger. I hope you're there after that long introduction.
Yes, I'm here, Betsy. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Great.
You mentioned an earthquake in California. There was also one in Denver, and you mentioned the one in Washington. And you know from before that I'm not only a businessman, but also a chemist. And as a scientist, I've been working on a theory and reading up on what others think about how the number of earthquakes we're having is accelerating. And it turns out that everything has what's called a coefficient of expansion, including things like rock and soil that make up the crust of the Earth. And I did an interesting calculation recently that shows that if you take into account the warming of the Earth's crust that has occurred over the last several decades of close to a degree centigrade, and you multiply it by the circumference of the Earth using the coefficient of thermal expansion for rock and dirt, and which is, you know, an approximate number, it turns out that the Earth has to expand by about a quarter of a mile given its circumference to accommodate the added heat that's been put into the planet. Now, if you imagine a quarter of a mile, that's more than 1,000 feet that needs to be accommodated. And we already know that earthquakes are caused when tectonic plates of the planet are releasing pressure from build-up movement of these plates. So it stands to reason, actually, that earthquake frequency could, in fact, be another impact that people don't yet appreciate from climate change or global warming.
I'm tempted to say lions and tigers and bears, oh my, as if we don't have enough to worry about in terms of the effects of climate change. We now have to lose sleep over when is the next earthquake going to happen. I happen to have been awake and went into see if my daughter was okay, and she has not been through too many earthquakes, even though we live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she was pretty shaken up. I didn't hear how strong it was, but definitely noticeable, and if your theory is correct, oh my goodness. And of course there's massive killer earthquakes around the world that take lives because they don't have the same buildings and infrastructure that we're lucky enough to have here in these United States. So just as climate change is being felt most severely seemingly in Somalia right now while we, tootle around in our SUVs, seemingly oblivious, those earthquakes probably, and I don't know, I'm certainly no geologist, could have even far more far-reaching devastating consequences for parts of the world that are, not as securely sheltered as we are.
Right, and it's one more positive feedback effect where, one problem leads to another, and earthquakes are what cause tsunamis, so it led, if this theory is true, to the tsunami in Japan, which knocked out some nuclear power plants and thereby reduced the amount of power available from the that industry, but also caused many deaths and other damage. But I started off on a point that's not one that you asked me about, and I would like to come back to the other two points. You mentioned the Global Warming Education Network's Go the Limit campaign, and that's part of what we're trying to do to get the word out there to wake people up to this problem, because in the United States, which is still a democracy, last time I checked, the politicians do what the citizens ask. And that worked pretty well for quite a while, but when you get into a scientific issue such as climate change, we rely more and more on our federal government with all of the scientific expertise that it can muster through federally funded research programs to inform the public of dangers that are not easily visible to the public. This happens all the time. You think back to the development of radar during World War II. An average citizen might not see an enemy plane coming at that point in time, but radar was developed so that the government could offer us a defense against enemy planes. In a similar fashion, the United States government at www.change.org summarizes the results of decades of research that have been done by the federal government at a cost of close to $20 billion to investigate climate change. And the work that's summarized at that website does clearly point out that this is happening. It's real. It's caused by man. It's going to cause many problems. And so we have a disconnect now between what the government knows and what it's telling its citizens to protect themselves. And normally the government would step in and educate people and take action. And in the case that we have now with climate change, that apparently there's so much money flowing from the fossil fuel industry, the largest industry on the planet, which has a vested interest in continuing the status quo, that our politicians are who have to work much of their campaign to raise money to get reelected are failing to get the word out on the need to react to climate change.
Do you think that's in part, Roger, because there is not the hue and cry from the American public saying do something about this? And we could talk a long time about some of the reasons for that, but I think that is a large part of it, that people are preoccupied with other issues, that Americans have traditionally not been strong environmentalists or not activists anyway, even though there is increasing reason to become more vigilant and demand leadership on the environmental front. It's just not happening.
Definitely. That's why we think we need to have something dramatic happen. And one thing that would help would be if President Obama would go on primetime national television to give not a State of the Union address, but a State of the Climate address.
I love that. Which,
yeah, he could, in 1 hour, Betsy, explain this whole climate change or global warming situation. You could tell the American public that it's real and that it's man-caused and that we need to all work together to shift over the next decade or so from fossil fuels to renewable energy, and we could solve it. Americans rose to the challenge to defeat Hitler in World War II. We've done this over and over again, but what's lacking is the awareness of the people that we have a problem. And that's because global warming is so slow and so stealthy that people, as you said, who are going about their everyday business with raising kids, going to school, working, and et cetera, don't notice anything changing because it's so gradual.
And yet, look at the extreme weather we've had, Roger, in this country, you know, in this past year, and then before that, Pakistan and Russia and other parts of the world, Somalia now with this extreme drought. But look at Texas. They also are suffering through an extreme drought, fires that may still be burning, and yet the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, throwing his hat into the presidential ring, proudly, arrogantly declaring he's not a believer.
I know. It really, as a scientist, Betsy, that makes me sick, because this country, as you well know, was built on science. The space program helped us develop the microprocessors, basically the science behind this country's development has been responsible for every great advancement we've had, from radar that I mentioned all the way through automation to the internet. That's all based on science. And with today's GOP candidates trying to go anti-science, with the possible exception of John Huntsman, who I
called him out
for
on Sunday. That was great. It felt so good.
We actually sent him a letter about a month ago when he first threw his hat out and mentioned that he was supporting the issue of climate change, and thanked him for doing that. And so we're writing to him again to tell him to keep up the good work, because we need to have science in this country, and we need a wake-up call to the citizens if they don't react soon to do things like this, stopping the tar sands Keystone XL pipeline that you're going to cover in the second part of the show. And before I get to the Go the Limit, I might mention that Susan and I are heading down to Washington on the 30th to spend 3 days and to participate in a sit-in in front of the White House and quite likely get arrested. We're not the type to do this. We've never done anything like it before, but with so much at stake and the fact that Jim Hansen, the NASA scientist, says it's going to be game over for the climate if this tar sands deposit gets totally developed and throws that much more CO2 into the atmosphere, we just think about our kids and our grandkids and say, okay, we'll spend the $1,000, we'll go in, we'll join the other thousands who are coming from every state in the union and put our bodies on the line for something that important.
God bless you. And before we do talk about Go the Limit, and I promise we will have time to do that, just back up a little bit. For those who did not hear our first interview, I love the story, as of course I often tell D.R. Tucker's climate conversion, of what happened for you and Susan vis-a-vis climate and being proud Republicans and what evolved from that.
Yeah, it's a little, I chuckle a little bit because I've changed so much since the days I grew up in Ohio, as did Susan. We grew up in Republican families. We admired, I remember Ike Eisenhower was the first president I really remember clearly. And in my case, I was supported in general Republican candidates straight through, just almost out of habit, although in later years I started evaluating more and more what each candidate stood for. But we totally switched parties and actually worked very hard to get President Obama going up, elected by going up to New Hampshire and calling on individuals in different communities to get out the vote and encourage them to vote for Obama. We went to phone banks for many nights and made hundreds of phone calls along with others into various states to encourage people to vote for Obama. And we met him at a rally, and basically our words to him were climate change, and he said, I got it. And so not only did we shift parties to get Obama elected, but now that he's more or less, well, not totally dropped the ball, but backed away from so many opportunities to educate the public about this and to move the ball forward, we're really wondering who we're going to vote for. We're hoping he will stand up to his campaign promise and the things he said the night he was elected, that he's going to make sure that the earth starts healing and that the ocean levels stop rising under his watch. Well, we're still waiting for him to do that.
Well, you have a lot of company in that, and I like Bill McKibben's quote on the subject. He said, yes, President Obama has done some good things, parenthetically, on the environment around the edges, but nothing substantive yet, and how this is a perfect opportunity, especially as he launches his campaign and hopes to get in for a second term to reassert his commitment to moving America forward in terms of transitioning to a future that has renewable energy at its core and gets us off fossil fuels. That has been sorely lacking, that strong stance. And, you know, many Democrats, whatever party, who are concerned about our environment are saying, who are we going to support? You know, we're disappointed in Obama, and yet look at the Republican crop. And John Huntsman, even though he is very outspoken, thank goodness, on, you know, what's wrong with believing science. And I loved how he kind of put his tongue in his cheek, and he said, call me crazy, but I believe 98% of the world's climate scientists.
Yeah,
well said and well put. You know, but John Huntsman is no liberal. So, you know, who does that leave us? Not that I'm saying we're any particular one category here, but, you know, progressives, who are we going to support? And it's a little bit early to be too concerned about that. So what I know, Gwen, Global Warming Education Network, and certainly America's newly launched Green Tea Party are hoping to do is to make sure that we can connect the dots so that we can get legislators and presidents, any politicians in there in positions of power who understand at a very deep level what we're up against ecologically and are prepared to, you know, address these issues. I mean, because they're not easy to solve. But you got to start at least believing they're real and, you know, getting the best and brightest in to think about how we're going to come up with alternatives so that we can survive and thrive as a nation. And if that's not even happening, you know, it's hard to imagine how we're really going to get serious about this.
That's right. And I might mention as an aside, I know, Betsy, you have many other interests, as do I, besides the climate and the progressive movement. But, for my
I used to have more. I've gotten a little bit obsessed and a little bit single-track. People said, you know, why not run for office? I said, because this is the main issue I care about, and you have to care about all issues to be a politician. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Roger.
Well, same here. But I think people need to remember that we're not doing this because it's fun to go to Washington and sit in front of the White House and get arrested or start a Green Tea Party or run a nonprofit called Gwen. Susan and I would rather be spending the time up in New Hampshire hiking or with our grandchildren. We're doing this because we feel a call to action where others are uninformed and unaware of a serious problem we face. And personally, I can't stand the idea that after all the thousands of years of human evolution, with all the great things we've done from Beethoven's symphonies to the art of Monet and putting a man on the moon and so on and so forth, that we can't solve a very solvable problem just because the word isn't getting out to the citizens of what we need to do. It just really irks me.
Don't forget Michelangelo and all the treasures in Florence. That blows my mind that that was sort of the peak of our artistic, you know, period in the world. And they're like, what happened? Why did we stop, you know, progressing? And then when you look at the current situation politically, environmentally, it's hard to believe, especially, you know, I'm a baby boomer, right in the middle of the baby boom generation. Mm-hmm. And I would have thought that by the time we came of age, yes, I grew up in, you know, California. Yes, I went to UC Berkeley. Yes, I've always been a Democrat and a liberal and more recently an environmental activist. That's the last 15 years. But once I woke up big time to that being really what I think is the most critical issue, because without a stable climate and a, you know, inhabitable planet, we don't have much else. And everybody cares about other things, but they're going to be hindered, to put it mildly, if we don't get this beat. And so, you know, growing up that way, I just thought that intelligence would prevail and that the dinosaurs would get out of the way. Who knew that we would have the arrival of dinosaurs? I mean, you know,
exactly.
The fossil fuelers is just too much to be believed. And what don't you love when the deniers say, you know, what we have, what is our stake? You know, why are you not spending time with your grandkids? Why am I not spending more time volunteering at my daughter's school? Because we know too much and we feel a sense of urgency. Not that we're greedy and trying to get more money for our grants and our nonprofits. Certainly anyone who knows my story knows I spent every penny I had following this passion, and that's where it can take us, because we give time, we give money, we give everything we can once we feel an obligation to speak up. And it's just the most absurd, especially while they're most follow the money. It'll go back to the oil industry and the competitive enterprise institutes of the world. They're probably getting paid millions, these people who are accusing we environmental activist types of being greedy. It's just absurd. It would be funny, again, if it weren't so sad and serious.
Exactly. Gwen's funding is basically out of my own pocket from money I've earned working hard, doing the American thing of earning a living, getting kids through college and all that. And so nobody can accuse Gwen of having tainted money. So let me get on to Go the Limit.
Green front either. What did you say? There ain't no money here. It's a nonprofit channel, and I've been doing this as a volunteer for 15 years. So next, I'd love to, you know, arm wrestle these guys on that and point to all the environmental activists I know who do it, you know, as voluntary or underpaid. Certainly, it's just absurd. Scientists and environmentalists agree. Ha. Go ahead.
Well, I would encourage, let me talk about Go the Limit for a few minutes.
Please.
Go the Limit, which can be found at www.gothelimit.org, is a concept that we're working on, which we're viewing as opportunities to wake citizens up to the reality of this problem. And it has two parts to it. One is just the simple fact that by going the speed limit, which hardly anyone does in this country, we could create an American civil obedience movement as opposed to a civil disobedience movement. And the obedience to the speed limit would prevent approximately 10,000 U.S. highway deaths per year, which are attributed to excessive speed. It would save up to 14% of our fuel costs for every 10-mile-per-hour reduction in speed. And in the other prong, it can generate attention for an issue which is essentially going to lead us to very serious problems in the future if we don't have a stable climate. And those problems won't only be weird weather and hurricanes and possibly earthquakes, as I mentioned. But if you look at what is happening to the food crops and cotton crops and so on, we're also going to be seeing increasing food and material prices if we don't stop this thing. So Go the Limit is a little bit like a wake-up call. If it's done in a coordinated way, which we thought might be interesting to try, people could go out in their Priuses or hybrid cars or whatever and take a drive together on the highway and safely go the speed limit, being sure that they don't block any emergency vehicles or anything, but just do this in a way so that people might drive together and slow traffic down a bit. And if this were done in a coordinated way across the country or across the world, where we're actually posting the action on a global climate change site called www.globalclimatecampaign.org, which is going to be highlighting actions during the climate meetings in South Africa this coming November. We're suggesting that on December 3rd, Saturday, which is the Global Day of Climate Action, at noon local time in every country in the world, people who've got cars could go out on the nearest highway with a friend and drive at the speed limit. And this is something that we think the media would find hard to ignore. There's often a mainstream media blackout on climate events because they either see it as something that would not be favored by their advertisers, or they
especially
view
on
it
Fox
as old
News.
Exactly. That's why the tar sands action has been getting only so much coverage. I've yet to see anything about it on the evening news, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But if you imagine the traffic going the speed limit across the planet, that's going to be pretty hard to ignore. And then the challenge will be to shift whatever anger might be generated by people who are slowed for, let's say, a 30-minute period during one day of the year, convert that anger to an awareness of the serious problem that we have, so that people aren't going to be saying down the road when the consequences are obvious, why didn't somebody tell us when we had a chance to change things back in 2011? So it's very much like an alarm clock going off when your kids don't want to go to school or you don't want to get up and go to work. You don't like the alarm clock, but by golly, that alarm clock is what gets you to work on time or gets you to school on time so that you can have a successful career or successfully be educated for a sustainable future for yourself and your family. So it's not something we think is going to be appreciated at first. But we think if it serves the purpose of getting the word out so that citizens are aware of the problem, if we could encourage, for example, President Obama to give the State of the Climate speech that I mentioned earlier as a result of this pressure, that would be a good thing. And just say one more thing. I feel that President Obama is not doing more because he gets so much pressure from the GOP and from the fossil fuel industry and all the lobbyists. And he doesn't have that much pressure coming the other way. Even
exactly.
The arrests in Washington, as great as they are, they're not that great. But go the limit with the same number of people being arrested in Washington, roughly 2,000, you could really have a noticeable impact on the traffic in this country. And with modern networking and social media, a go the limit event could be organized any place, any time, at any speed, for any duration, simply by having a coordinated approach to the action.
So how can people find out more if they'd like to plan something?
Pardon me?
If people would like to learn more about the Go the Limit campaign and perhaps plan something in their community, is there a website up yet, or how can they learn more?
Yes, they should go to www.gothelimit.org or go to www.globalclimatecampaign.org. And they'll find more information there, or they can call us at Gwen at 781-863-1400, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. And by the way, Gwen doesn't really want to do this on our own. We're a very small organization. We're underfunded, even though I'm the funder. Well, because I'm the funder.
I understand.
We're hoping
we can only go so far with our getting shallower pockets, right? Because of our activism.
We want the large organizations such as, I don't know, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, RAND.
NRDC.
NRDC.
Environmental Defense Fund, National Wildlife Federation, all of them,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. 350.org. We would like all those organizations to swallow any pride if it wasn't an idea that was invented there. Well, we're happy to let anybody take credit for it. All we want to do is get the world awakened to this need to act together so that our kids and grandkids and 7 billion other people and billions of other critters and creatures and plants on this planet can go on to enjoy the climate that we all evolved under in the last thousands of years that we're now at the culmination of in 2011. It's a wake-up call to save the planet and its inhabitants. And as I said, I'd rather be hiking, but on the other hand, if this would be successful, it'd be well worth it, and we hope others will join us in this action and call us if they have any questions and just go out and do it. We hope it'll be self-organized. It's something
yep.
that's very simple.
and I hope to have a mainstream media platform for a supported green talk show, and there is none on the planet right now, at least not in this country, instead of launching America's Green Tea Party and doing house parties and organizing. But, you know, sometimes drastic times call for drastic measures, and we must follow our consciousness, our hearts, and our minds. And, you know, I have to think, don't you, that we are on some kind of collision course with this just ridiculous, you know, dismissal of science at such a high level, people running for the highest office in the land, proudly declaring they don't believe science. I mean, let's just stop and rewind and pause and say that again. What?
I know.
Would you ignore 98% of doctors who told you you had a serious illness and had a prescription for how to, you know, if not cure, then treat it? I don't think so. I mean, let's just, you know, stop this nonsense, you know?
Yeah, give up your cell phone and your iPods and all the other things that science has brought you, and see how that works out for you.
Or as I say, go without your environment, you who don't vote in favor of it, you who are not into supporting our environment. That means no food, no water, no air. Come back and we'll talk, you know. Get over this arrogance that you don't need nature. I don't think so, you know. Anyway, if I can get that word out, that's what I'm trying to do. And thank you for all the fabulous work that you and Susan are doing with the Global Warming Education Network. You are so rational, so reasoned. I wish you would run for president. And then we could all go back to what we really want to be doing, which is spending more time with our kids and grandkids, not losing sleep at night, that they're not going to have a stable climate and an inhabitable planet that they can thrive in, just as we were fortunate enough to be in growing up, never dreaming that this would all be threatened.
I agree, and I thank you for all you're doing, Betsy, and bless you for that. More power to you.
Right on. Okay, power to the people, the green people especially. May we go forth and multiply and greenify loudly,
exactly.
Widely. And we'll be following. Maybe we'll check in with you after you've been to the protest with Susan and get your impressions, and then we'll try to see what we can get going to accelerate the Go the Limit campaign. Thanks so much, Roger.
You're welcome. That would be great. Thanks again, Betsy. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. And that is Roger Schimmel with Global Warming Education Network, and we're going to be back in a moment with someone who is at the Keystone XL Pipeline tar sands protest in Washington, D.C. Stay with us. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. When we come back, we'll speak to a protester with Rainforest Action Network.